Temple University proudly supports WHYY and its commitment to education with 17 schools and colleges and more than 400 programs. Temple University's Hire an Owl campaign is committed to connecting leading companies and organizations with qualified Temple graduates and students seeking meaningful career opportunities. More information is available online at temple.edu/takecharge. Temple University proudly supports WHYY.
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Cleanup continues from last night's short-lived but powerful thunderstorms, which claimed trees and power lines. WHYY's Jessica McDonald looks into when a storm becomes a tornado.
Jared Klein is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service Forecast Office in Mount Holly, New Jersey. He says Tuesday's storm was a particularly powerful example of what's called a bow echo,
which is a long line of storms that kind of bow out, and where it bows out in the middle of it is where the strongest winds are. So sometimes you could even see little areas of rotation that kind of enhance the damage.
It's those pockets of rotation that might be tornadoes. Radar alone can't say. A definitive determination, Klein says, requires a visit to the scene to check out the destruction.
You'll look for some signs of rotation. Maybe the trees that fell in the area aren't all pointing at the same direction. They might be pointing to the south or back even to the west in some cases.
Based on such storm forensics, investigators decide if the storm qualifies. And if so, rate it from 0 to 5 on what's called the Enhanced Fujita Scale. For property owners, though, fellow National Weather Service meteorologist Valerie Miola says it might not matter.
In the end, it's excessive wind damage, and it's just as devastating whether you had a tornado or not.
Wind speeds in South Jersey, she says, hit 70 to 75 miles per hour. I'm Jessica McDonald, WHYY News.
June's turning out to be a tough month for water main breaks in Philly. Two big pipes burst in 1 week, sending millions of gallons of water into homes and businesses and flooding out cars. In addition to cleaning up the mess, it means a big bill to taxpayers to settle damage claims. Details from WHYY's Aaron Moselle.
Brandy Young knows a little something about loss prevention. At the Ross Dress for Less in East Falls, it's her job to thwart would-be shoplifters. But last Thursday, there was nothing Young could do to stop her car from getting drenched as 7 million gallons of water gushed from a broken transmission main beneath the parking lot outside her job.
I just seen little bubbles. Less than 5 minutes later, the whole lot was flooded, and by the time I got to my car, it was already water up to the seats in it.
Young's Ford Taurus is now sitting in a tow yard. For the time being, she's relying on SEPTA for transportation. And that's been pretty hectic. Young has to take 2, sometimes 3 buses to get to Ross. What's more, she's got 3 small kids who need to be dropped off and picked up at daycare.
There's been times I've been crying because it's difficult getting from one place to another.
Help could soon be on the way, though. Since the 120-year-old main is city property, Philadelphia will help cover some of the damages. If, like Brandy Young, you have insurance, the city typically reimburses you for your deductible. However, Barry Scott, the city's risk manager, says you don't have to have insurance to file a claim.
If you don't have any insurance, then the city would be liable for, you know, the value of the loss. If you do have insurance, that would come first.
After a water main break occurs, claim adjusters inspect the damages and the claimant gets an estimate. Scott says the two sides then work together and settle on an amount.
The vast majority of claims are settled in our claims process, and it's very much the exception rather than the rule that someone will go to court with that.
If a settlement is $4,000 or less, payment can take just a few weeks. The city's risk management office can cut a check directly. Larger claims take longer, sometimes 6 months or more. By law, there's also a $500,000 liability cap per water main break, no matter how many homes and businesses are damaged. As of Monday, Philadelphia had paid out close to $300,000 in water main break claims for the fiscal year that's about to end. Since 2010, settlements total just over $2 million. A water department spokesperson says the city budgets to replace 1% of its underground infrastructure each year. At that rate, it'll take 100 years before all distribution mains are replaced. Most of the city's pipes are at least that old already. I'm Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
This week, NPR's Morning Edition has been reporting on the secret history of chemical weapons tests during World War II. In the 1940s, 60,000 American soldiers were exposed to agents including mustard gas. Some of these tests were race-based, with different skin colors observed for different reaction. 70 years on, the Veterans Administration has been criticized for its mistreatment of permanently injured soldiers. WHYY's Todd Bookman sat down with an Army vet from Scranton, Pennsylvania, who volunteered for testing.
There's a working-class neighborhood in South Scranton that has hills steep like San Francisco's. At the top of one block, Walter Gantz, better known as Babe, holds court at his kitchen table.
Oh, my God. 11-1-24. That makes me ancient, 90 years young.
Gantz has spent most of his long life here in Scranton. He was in high school when the bombs fell on Pearl Harbor. Shortly after, he graduated, then enlisted, and began training as a combat medic. But before heading to Europe with the rest of the 95th Medical Battalion, Gantz was approached by his commanding officers.
They asked for volunteers. Of course, when you're 18, you're young and foolish, so you volunteer. But there, it was a secret mission.
A five-week operation to take place in Bushnell, Florida. This was February 1944, and the Allied forces were testing protective equipment, like gas masks, clothing, and ointments. Chemical weapons were widespread in World War I. Gantz's own father was injured by them. There was fear they'd be used again. Part of his medical training involved chemical burns, so Walter knew full well what he was getting himself into. Still, the mission proved to have moments you couldn't prepare for.
There was a Canadian Halifax bomber. That bomber used to come overhead 200-300 feet above ground, and they would actually spray us with chemical agents. And you know, it's a funny thing, Todd. I heard that Halifax bomber for years and years. That just stayed with me, really.
Physically unharmed, Gantz would make it through that first month of tests. Then one evening, he and his fellow soldiers were sleeping in a field, two to a tent, when they were caught off guard.
And during the nighttime, they would set off these chemical bombs, and they explode these bombs. And the end result, Todd, was we were... The both of us was burnt.
A fog of mustard gas rolled through the area. Dime-sized blisters bubbled up on his lower legs and back. His eyes and lungs started stinging. His tentmate and others were more seriously hurt. An ambulance brought them to MacDill Air Force Base near Tampa. He couldn't call home, couldn't have visitors, but says it actually wasn't all bad.
They treated us royally. You know, the funny thing how you remember things even after 70 years. But, you know, in them days, Todd, burlesque was very popular, okay? And there was a fan dancer, the most popular fan dancer in the country by the name of Sally Rand, okay? And she came and put on a show for us. Now, isn't that amazing? I can remember that. I don't remember too much about the hospital, but I remember Sally coming.
The Babe's wife of 65 years, Jean, sits across the table from us. She throws me a half smile. He didn't used to talk about these mustard gas tests with her or anyone for decades following the war.
If we were to say anything to anyone, okay, family included, that we would wind up in Fort Leavenworth, that's a prison. And of course, when you're young, you're very fearful of those things. And that's how it happened. So I kept mum all that time, really.
Gantz didn't suffer any long-term health effects, though several of his buddies did. It would take until the early 1990s when, under scrutiny, the VA finally promised compensation for the severely injured.
You know, the sad thing about it, the government actually turned their backs on us. They never followed up on as to how we were doing or anything like that.
He says he could have left that hospital in March of 44 and gone back to civilian life. Instead, he decided to put his medical training to good use in places like Holland, France, Belgium, and Germany.
In them days, you know, patriotism was a very big thing, you know what I mean? And so I decided to go back with the 95th, and I'm glad I did. I really am.
There's medals for his service, including a Bronze Star, framed inside Gantz's Hilltop House. He says the 95th Battalion held reunions over the years, but that no one ever brought up the mustard gas tests. They swore an oath to their country, an oath none of them took lightly. For WHYY News, I'm Todd Bookman.
Turning to this evening's headlines, utility officials say that some residents in storm-ravaged areas of southern New Jersey may not get their power restored until the weekend. More than 100,000 of some 280,000 customers have had their service restored. The Red Cross has opened two reception centers in hard-hit Gloucester County. Meanwhile, officials in Delaware County, Pennsylvania, have issued an emergency declaration. They're seeking state aid to deal with the damage. More than 100,000 PECO customers, mostly in Delaware County, still remain without power. Clear skies, 82 degrees on Independence Mall. It's 6:16. You're listening to Newsworks tonight on WHYY. Clear and comfortable is the call overnight, low 66 degrees. Sunny tomorrow morning, then clouding up with a 50% chance of late-day showers. Tomorrow's high, 86.
Still ahead.
I was an insomniac before I started in morning radio, but I think maybe that's over. I'm sure I could sleep later than four.
The morning voice of WXPN gets ready to sign off. Michaela Majune joins us as Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers School of Business at Camden encourages working professionals in the region to take the next step in their career by earning a master's degree. The Rutgers Professional MBA and the Professional Master's in Accounting degrees are accelerated programs designed for working professionals with classes held on Saturdays in Mount Laurel. An information session is at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, July 7th at the Cherry Hill Library. Details at pmba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-2700.
We have only a few days left before the end of WHYY's fiscal year. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. With your support, we will be able to continue to grow our services in the months ahead. Plus, when we reach 2,500 pledges towards our overall goal, we'll lock in a $30,000 matching gift from a generous donor, Mrs. Carolyn Turner. We're getting closer to meeting that goal, but we're not there yet. You can get us over the finish line by doing this. Visit WHYY.org right now and make a pledge.
Abington Health supports WHYY. Abington Memorial Hospital has been recognized as a fully accredited chest pain center by the Society of Cardiovascular Patient Care. The specialized physicians at their Heart and Vascular Institute help patients who arrive with symptoms of a heart attack, quickly evaluating patients experiencing these symptoms and offering the best available treatment options. If you have chest pain, their team is dedicated to helping you continue to enjoy life. Learn more at abingtonhealth.org.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Cities are harnessing the ubiquity of smartphones and social media to make it easier to communicate with residents. Harrisburg is now Pennsylvania's eighth municipality to partner with Nextdoor for public agencies, and Reading iRequest was launched in the Pretzel City not too long ago. Keystone Crossroads' Emily Previty reports that there are differences among them, not least of which is the cost.
The social networking site started as a neighbors-only Craigslist of sorts. Urban policy blog Next City called it the Facebook of neighborhoods, although users seem to tend toward more practical posts, at least those from my neighborhood in Harrisburg. A chihuahua lost and found again, electrician recommendations, new homes for old books, and so on since 2011. Each neighborhood forum is closed to people who can't prove they actually live there. They have to verify their address with a phone or credit card number, a couple social security digits, or wait for an input code to arrive by mail. There are 1,200 Nextdoor users in Harrisburg.
To put that in perspective, that is more people than vote in a municipal election sometimes.
That's Harrisburg Mayor Eric Papenfuss speaking at a news conference kicking off the city's partnership with Nextdoor for Public Agencies. That platform went live about a year ago. Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Castle Shannon, Carlisle, Swarthmore, Paint Township, Lansdowne, and nearly 900 other municipalities nationwide have since started using it to blast alerts to residents who sign up for the parent service and get their feedback, too. Meanwhile, Nextdoor's been growing at nearly triple its prior rate. Joseph Percelli is a strategist for the company.
As more cities come on board and people find out that cities are proactively communicating with their neighbors, letting them know when there's going to be construction on their street or when there's a community meeting to talk about an incident, people find that very valuable.
For public officials and their constituents, this is a way to ease and expedite their exchanges. The government can even send messages to select online neighborhoods, although it can't see over the digital fences protecting each one. It's also free for everyone involved. Percelli says the company plans to generate revenue eventually using ads and maybe charging a transaction fee for payments between users made through the site.
Our plans down the road are to perhaps connect neighbors to local service providers, local businesses, and on-demand services like helping them find like a babysitter.
The company has been funded so far with more than $210 million in venture capital. Forbes reports just $6.5 million in startup for public stuff, the company behind non-emergency reporting and communications apps in hundreds of municipalities. Media is one of them, and Philly enlisted public stuff's aid for the city's 311 service. Reading is another. The distressed city paid $16,000 for Reading iRequest. The mayor's chief of staff, Aaron Lloyd, says the city went with public stuff after vetting several choices, and a major factor was compatibility with the city's in-house digital record-keeping system, since submissions do become official city records. Redesign Reading executive director Brian Kelly explains how the initiative between his nonprofit and City Hall actually works.
You have a pothole. Most people ride right by the pothole. They curse the city with limited staff and fiscal restraints. Most of the time, the city doesn't have the ability to go and inspect and find every pothole proactively. So we're saying, how can we start to change that? Somebody has a smartphone. Oh, there's a pothole. This is pissing me off. Take a picture, load it right into the system. It gets logged in.
Once that happens, the reporter gets an automated submission confirmation. Then the clock starts. City operations manager Maria Cantor could not quantify whether or how the app and its built-in accountability system has increased or expedited reporting and responses, but it does address what would otherwise be interpreted as inaction when noticeable results are delayed. But for Kelly, it's not just about results.
Is that going to change the economic development in a year, 2 years? No. But it's starting to change the conversation, and that's what we're looking at.
Emily Previty, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on the challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the four-station partnership. For those who wrap them into the rhythm of their day, it's almost too much to bear. In successive months, losing twin tentpoles, CBS Late Show host David Letterman and WXPN Morning Show host Michaela Majune. And before her mellifluous tones trail off at the end of this month, I'm happy and thrilled to have Michaela join me with a look back and ahead. Michaela, welcome to Newsworks Tonight.
Dave Heller, it's so great to see you and be here.
And let's note that your tenure with XPN exceeds Dave's at CBS.
Right. And I made more money than he did.
And he always resents you for it. Well, before that, Dave started at CBS. This Dave was preparing your coffee at the studios of 3905 Spruce Street.
I remember you being my first volunteer, Dave.
I do, too. And you are in large measure why I am at this end of the microphone. And you're right across from me now. And I thank you now and always for that. So it's great to see you again. I've learned that this new transition is bittersweet. So why don't we start with the sweet? And number one, I presume, is the opportunity to change your sleep schedule.
Oh, my goodness. I was an insomniac before I started in morning radio, but I think maybe that's over. I'm sure I could sleep later than four. It's been, you know, people are so surprised. Why are you leaving 25 years of this schedule? I mean, when people sub for me after a week, they're dog meat. So, you know, it's just time.
Now, you are going to pursue a new and actually old passion, that being screenwriting.
Yes. I had studied with a great screenwriting teacher in Los Angeles, Sid Field. And I actually had an agent with a writing partner. My partner was independently wealthy, but I really wanted to do something other than what I was working at to support myself. So when I was offered the job in Philadelphia, I thought, I'll go there for a year, get established in a major market on radio, go back to L.A. and work on radio in the morning and write in the afternoon.
And then 25 years got in the way.
Right. I forgot to go back, and I never have been able to do both. I'm not going back now either. I'm staying in Philadelphia. It has really grown on me, and I love it here.
What parts of it have grown on you, just as Philadelphia itself has grown in the past 25 years?
That's a big part of it, because when I moved here, it was not the Philadelphia we have now. I mean, the city was bankrupt. Nobody went downtown at night. The restaurant and the cultural scene was always wonderful. But the local music scene was very different. So much has evolved.
Let's turn to what you might envision missing in terms of the connections you made with countless thousands of listeners throughout the Philadelphia region and beyond.
That's it. I'm going to miss all that. I'm going to miss being able to be on the radio, present music, talk to artists, talk about things going on in the community, and really give a voice to a lot of people who don't have a voice through my voice. And that is such a treasure. As you know, Dave, it's a real honor and privilege. And I'm going to miss that a lot.
When I started with you, I remember vinyl, I remember CDs, and boy, has that world changed. I'm wondering, has the screenwriting business evolved too since you were last doing it?
Boy, that's a good question. There is now software so that you don't have to do your own margins, and you can submit a script electronically. I just entered a competition, and so you submitted a PDF rather than having to print out a long script and mail it and all that. So that's huge.
XBN is renowned for introducing its listeners to new music, and it still provides that valuable service. But is it diluted to the extent that there are other ways to find out about music and artists?
I just had this conversation with somebody the other day. I think people always want a local voice. There are a lot of music services online, but there's no person there, and there's no local person there telling you about what's going on in your community, who the artists are here, when they're going to be playing in clubs, and what else is going on. So I still think that's an important function.
A personality, a lovely voice, a trusted name. Thank you so much for your time in this capacity, and we wish you all the best in screenwriting ahead.
Dave, thank you so much for having me on, and I'll be listening. I'm your listener.
Be true, true to yourself, and you'll be magic.
Finally this evening, the Hamilton, New Jersey Police Department is dealing with an issue we couldn't have predicted 10 years ago. Department officials took to Facebook yesterday, asking local farmers to have their workers be more careful with their cell phones due to an extremely high number of butt dials. Now, the department tracked the surge of incoming calls to farming fields in the Hamilton area. The department said the accidental open line calls could interfere with legitimate emergencies. Okay, that's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Delaware Valley University supports WHYY. With DelVal's Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology, students develop the skills, knowledge, and clinical experience needed to work in the lives of others. Graduates are prepared to apply for the Pennsylvania Licensed Professional Counselor credential. A specialization in social justice or child and adolescent counseling can help make a difference in the community. More about a Delaware Valley University Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology is online at delval.edu/grad.